on RNIB Connect Radio.
I don't want another heartbreak. I don't need another turn to cry. No, I don't want to learn the hard way. Baby, hello. Oh, no. Goodbye. But you got me like a rocket shooting straight across the sky. It's the way you love me. It's a feeling like this. It's centrifugal motion. It's perpetual bliss. It's that pivotal moment. It's impossible. This kiss, unstoppable. This kiss. Cinderella said to Snow White, how does love get so off course? Oh, all I wanted was a white knight with a good heart, soft touch, fast horse. Ride me off into the sunset, baby, I'm forever yours. It's the way you love me, it's a feeling like this. It's centrifugal motion, it's perpetual bliss. It's that pivotal moment, it's this kiss, unsinkable. This kiss, you can kiss me in the moonlight, on the rooftop under the sky. Oh, you can kiss me with the windows open while the rain comes pouring inside. Oh, kiss me in sweet slow motion, let's let everything slide.
Faith Hill with This Kiss. It's the happy hour on RNIB Connect Radio. Hello, Paulina Kuhorov here. I'll be keeping you company, of course, for the next hour with all things happiness, well-being, and, you know, some random facts. Well, today it's actually going to be a happiness fact about a very interesting study. And also coming up on the show today, we'll be hearing about a peer Kickstarter group that's launched in Midlands. We'll be hearing more about it, and we'll be chatting to one of my favorite authors, Mike Viking. He'll be telling us all about his new book, which is here to offer us some advice on how we can make our homes our happy places. So that's all coming up on the show today, including music therapy moment, great music, and of course me, Paulina.
There she was, just walking down the street singing. She looked good. She looked fine. She looked good. She looked fine. And I nearly lost my mind. Before I knew it, she was walking next to me singing. Holding my hand just as natural as can be singing. We walked on to my door. We walked onto my door, then we kissed a little more. Oh, I knew we was falling in love. Yes, I did, and so I told her all the things I'd been dreaming of. Now we're together nearly every single day singing. Oh, we're so happy and
she's mine. Wedding bells are gonna chime. Oh, I knew we was falling in love. Yes, I did, and so I told her all the things I'd been dreaming of. Now we're together nearly every single day singing. Oh, we're so happy, and that's how we're gonna stay singing.
She's mine,
wedding bells are gonna chime. Oh, oh, yeah.
Do what diddy-diddy, dum diddy-do.
We'll sing it
to me. Do what diddy-diddy, dum diddy-do. Do what diddy-diddy, dum diddy-do.
Can our homes make us happier? Can we design for well-being? Can we create better homes where we not only live, but thrive? The answers to these questions have been under my nose all the time. Because growing up in Denmark means you grow up with two things, design and hygge.
You're listening to the Happy Hour on RNIB Connect Radio. Hygge. What is it and how can this little Danish and Norwegian word help improve our happiness and well-being? Well, Mike Viking is the founder of the Happiness Research Institute in Denmark and also an author of the international bestseller The Little Book of Hygge. Well, in his latest book, My Hygge Home, Mike shares his best tips for how to implement hygge into our homes and create a happy spaces. Well, Mike, it is so lovely chatting with you again. How are you?
Good, thank you, Paulina. Thanks for inviting me back.
No, it's lovely. I love talking all things hygge, but for someone who maybe doesn't really know what hygge is, I know in English-speaking countries, we have a tendency to, I guess, oversimplify it by saying hygge is coziness, but it's not as simple as that, is it?
I would argue that it's a little bit more complex. that's one word. If we were to say two words, I would say consciously cozy. And if I'm allowed more words, I would give an example of when I experienced hygge quite a few years ago now. But I was in Sweden with a group of friends, and we had been out hiking in the afternoon, but came back to the cabin. It was December, so it got dark in sort of mid-afternoon, and we got back into the cabin. And we lit the fire. There was a fireplace in the cabin, and we had also prepared a stew, so we got that boiling on the stove. But other than that, we were just sort of relaxing, sitting in our comfy clothes, enjoying a glass of wine and each other's company. And then one of my friends said, could this be any more hyggelig? Which is the adjective. And then one of the other ones said, yes, if there was a storm outside, because hygge is also this feeling of being sheltered from the outside. And I thought it was a Danish thing, but you mentioned the little book of hygge. Well, it's been translated into 38 languages. And I receive letters on a weekly basis from people around the world saying, I've been having hygge all my life. I just didn't know there was a word for it. So I think we just gave a universal human emotion a word. It used to be a Danish word, but now I think it's a global word.
Do you think hygge is a little bit like, I guess, a quiet happiness? And because we're all searching for happiness, we're so drawn to it.
You're definitely right. We're all drawn to happiness. We're all in pursuit of happiness. So my first colleague was Aristotle. He worked with the same questions more than 2,000 years ago that I'm working with today. And he said, happiness is the ultimate aim for human existence. Now, I've been working with happiness not for 2,000 years, but for 10 years. And I've been having a lot of conversations with people around the world. And we're all looking for the good life. And then your second point is hygge, a quiet form of happiness. I think you might also be right in that one. It's not the sort of big sort of American fireworks, you know, finishing the marathon, I don't know, kind of happiness, but it's sort of it's a quiet happiness, as you say, or it's sort of an everyday happiness. It's enjoying a book and a glass of wine when there's a storm outside. It's connecting with family and friends over a good hearty stew or whatever you prefer to put on the table. And the new book is essentially about what turns a house into a home. So how do we create places where we feel relaxed, where we feel safe, where we feel connected to other people and ourselves? So I think that is what Hygge is. Perhaps you're right, a quiet form of happiness or a pursuit of everyday happiness.
I guess that's just another definition to add to many ways of describing Hygge, isn't it?
Exactly.
So why did you decide to focus, or I guess narrow down, because you do so much research around Hygge, around happiness, why did you decide to narrow it down to that private space of our homes?
I think for a couple of reasons. So the idea for the book actually started quite a few years ago when a Canadian reader of mine told me that he had read the little book of Hygge. And because there's so much focus on lighting and candles in that book, he went out and he bought some candle holders. And he started to light candles for dinner at home. And him and his wife have three teenage sons. And when this guy, he started to light candles for dinner, his teenage boys, they started to tease him. Dad, what's going on with the candles? Do you want to have some romantic time with mom? Should we leave? But eventually the boys, they actually started to light the candles for dinner. And he says, now our family dinners last 15 to 20 minutes longer because candles puts the boys in a different mode, a storytelling mode. It changes the atmosphere around the table. So instead of just sitting down, shoveling down their food, they sit down, they sip their wine, and they talk about their day. And I thought, you know, I don't think candles are going to change the world, but I did think, isn't it interesting how a little change in how we eat dinner as a family and how we sort of design the table, how that changes how a family interact. And what other things can we look at from a sort of an architecture of happiness perspective that would help us achieve well-being and quality of life? So that was the sort of original idea. And then I actually wrote it during the pandemic. It was then, it still is now, perhaps even more, a turbulent world. There's a lot going on globally that I do not have control over. But I do have some sort of control over or influence over, you know, what happens within these walls? What do I put on the table tonight? And what's the atmosphere going to be around the table? I think it's also a way for us to focus on the zone of control or influence that we do have and help us sort of basically stack the deck in our favor when it comes to well-being. And I think people will recognize that they feel different in different places. And I think that's a sort of a global human phenomenon, that we are not isolated from the places we are in, but where we are also impact what we do and how we feel. And the book goes into that.
And it makes complete sense, because when you think about it, for years, office spaces and workspaces have been looking into designing those areas for best productivity and happiness for staff. So it makes sense that you apply that same concept, but to your home, to create what I think you often refer to as a safe zone, a place of somewhere you can escape to and feel relaxed and happy and content and really, really just safe.
Yeah.
Because that's ultimately one of the core things I think everyone needs, isn't it? Safety and security.
It is one of the sort of very foundations. If you look at Maslow's hierarchy of needs, it's at the very sort of foundation of his pyramid. We've looked at this at the Happiness Research Institute. We've done several studies around how our homes and houses impact our well-being. We can see that we like to be part of a community. We like to feel part of a small village. We like that we are on a first name basis with our neighbors. We like to be able to borrow a cup of sugar from them, etc. But we also all seem to have a need to be able to retreat to privacy and to be just ourselves. And our homes provide the opportunity to do that if we, again, design them right. So yeah, the privacy, security, safety, core basic human needs.
The greatest threat to capitalism is everyone feeling happy enough that they no longer need to buy anything to make them so. Which means that staying at home and finding comfort and joy in what you already have is an act of rebellion. This is what Hygge is truly all about. Living the good life on a tight budget. It is the enjoyment of simple pleasures. It is the art of creating a nice, warm, comforting atmosphere. I think one of the best things we can give to our children is an understanding of where we can find joy and well-being without spending money. And one of my main areas of focus at the Happiness Research Institute has to do with exploring how we can decouple wealth from well-being and most efficiently convert wealth into well-being. I believe Hygge can be a vital ingredient in this endeavor, as it does not require a full wallet. It is not extravagant and wasteful. Hygge is about making the best of what we have. However, when Hygge went beyond Denmark, a few things got lost in translation. This first occurred to me when an American journalist asked me, "If I want to get Hygge, what is the first thing I should buy?"
And you know what I like about your book? Because often when you think about, you know, those books about designing your home, it often can feel like quite expensive solutions, but you don't really have it. It's a mix of things you can do that might, some of them might not even cost you anything, but just some nicely spent time.
Yeah. I'm glad you read it that way, because I agree. And now we've given a lot of different definitions of what Hygge is. I think another one would be the good life on a low budget. that Hygge is about finding inexpensive way to enjoy life. And I think it's also interesting when you ask people in the UK, there is a survey that I refer to in the book. When you ask people in the UK, what turns a house into a home? Nobody mentions stuff in the top five. I think the first thing that people mention is a sofa. I think it's on seventh place. But the first things that turn a house into a home is love. It's a sense of belonging. It's the sound of laughter. It's the smell of good food cooking. It's something that doesn't have to cost a lot. And I think that's especially relevant these days where we see cost of living going up. And in the book, I also talk about, you know, how can we sort of save on food preparation and reduce food waste, because there's nothing Hygge about wasting food.
Mm. Which actually brings me to a question I really wanted to ask, because you in the book say Hygge is all about enjoying the process, taking things slow, which you touched upon a little bit, but I think in this case, in the chapter, you were talking in relation to pickling produce and preparing food for winter time. And I feel like all of those things about taking things slow and enjoying the moment and living in the moment are very connected to mindfulness. So do you think there's that connection between Hygge and mindfulness as well?
I think there are definitely some parallel things. Both focuses on the importance of presence. Both focuses on the importance of slowness. But I think the origins are different, where mindfulness perhaps is something you actively do or set aside time for. You have a mindfulness session, you go to your yoga studio and do mindfulness. I think Hygge is something that is just inherently part of everyday life. So I think there are similarities, but also differences.
And we're going to return to that conversation with Mike Viking about my Hygge home very shortly on the Happy Hour. But first, let's have a musical break with Cece Peniston. And finally, because it is the Happy Hour, so we, of course, have to have some happy songs.
Oh,
Fantastic. A song there from Cece Peniston. You're listening to the Happy Hour on RNIB Connect Radio. And now we're going to return to that wonderful conversation. Mike Viking, who wrote his latest book, My Hygge Home, continues to chat with me all about hygge, happiness, well-being, and making our homes our happy place. Okay, so we've been talking a lot about happiness, coziness, those really lovely things you mentioned, their companionship, friends, family. I'm going to swivel a little bit because a big part of your book is actually humor. And in particular, you have a bit of a love for some really cheesy jokes and puns. And I have one right in front of me. And this is in regards to enjoying a good fondue with friends and family. And you started this chapter with sweet dreams are made of cheese. Who am I to disagree? So how much research do you have to put in for a book to find all those dad jokes and all the puns?
The dad jokes and the horrible puns don't take a lot of research. They sort of come naturally. It's a flaw. But no, I like to write in a conversational tone. I like to mix what I think is a great sense of humor and personal anecdotes with the data. When I write, I imagine sitting across from somebody else over dinner, having a nice conversation. And that is what I would do if we were talking over dinner. I would talk about studies, but I would also sort of give personal examples of what we see in the data, and I would mix in great sense of humor. So that's the way I write.
60-something million years ago, the dinosaurs were made suddenly extinct when a large asteroid hit Earth and atmospheric particles blocked the sunlight for several years. Danes call this period January. Last January, I saw a Danish weather report for the following 10 days. Not a single chance of sunlight. We don't get a lot of sun in winter. That is why Danes are drawn to a ray of sun like moths are to a flame. I have a scar to prove it. One morning 15 years ago, I woke up in a country house just outside Siena. I was there for a wedding, got up before the rest of the guests, and headed downstairs to the kitchen. I loaded the espresso maker and lit the stove. There was a small square window in the kitchen, and through it I could see the brown autumn fields and a clear blue sky. I felt happy and wanted to take a deep breath of the lovely fresh air. I stuck my head out the window, only to discover it was not open and I had put my head through the window, breaking it, waking up everyone in the house. To make matters worse, nobody even nicknamed me Scarface at the wedding. Nevertheless, what remains is the notion of how dangerously attractive sunlight can be for Danes.
But of course, I use a lot of the data and studies and research we do at the Happiness Research Institute. One of the studies that went into this was a study where we looked at, I think it was 13,000 homes in Europe, looking at why some people were happier with their homes than others, and what are sort of the barriers and drivers of happiness in your home. But the thing is, data might convince people, but people struggle more with remembering data. So combining the data with stories, I think, is powerful if we want people to remember the points of the book 2, 3, 5 years from now. One of my good friends, John Halliwell, who's also a happiness researcher, said to me, data shapes the science, but stories spreads the science. So I think finding examples in our personal life of what we see in the data is a good way to communicate studies.
Now, you mentioned the data, and you have quite a few nice colorful charts and graphs and things in the book. Was it easy to translate those into the audiobook format?
I always write in the text what we see in the graphs. And I always do the narration myself for the audiobooks. It's a really good exercise for me, where Danish is my first language and English is my second. I could have used that years ago, because apparently I've been pronouncing tomatoes wrong.
I mean, that sounded correct to me. I'm not sure why they say you pronounced it wrong. How did you say it?
I can't remember whether I actually said tomatoes or tomatoes. I just remember the first time I did the audiobook for the little book of Hugo. My editor jumped in and said, actually, Mike, we pronounce it tomatoes or tomatoes. But I've lost the memory of exactly what it was. But it's always good fun to do the audiobook. It's less glamorous than I thought. This was also, I think, for the little book of Hugo. We do it over a couple of days. But on the first day, the sound guy, Richard, came in and he said, Mike, I'm just going to come in with a couple of bananas because I can hear your tummy rumbling. I was really hungry. It was before lunch. And it meant I ended up with, eating a lot of bananas and sitting with a pillow on my stomach to cover the noise. So less glamour than I expected, but it's good fun.
And how did you find narrating this book this time around? Because I remember when we spoke about The Little Book of Hugo, you said you would struggle with V's and W's in sequence. And a particular example you gave us was Viking Warrior Review. Can you say it better? Can you say it in your sleep now? How was recording My Hugo Home?
It was... I didn't struggle as much this time, and it's funny you remember that phrase. It's something I've developed, and I actually, when I was biking out to the studio for the audiobook for this one, I was actually practicing that sentence. So I was cycling on the bike paths and murmuring the Viking Warrior Review. I don't know what my co-cyclists must have thought, but it wasn't as difficult this time, and maybe it's because I'm more conscious of it. When I write, that I know I have to do the audiobook later on. So maybe I stay away from writing sentences like that. The book I've struggled the most with, I can't remember whether, it was probably The Art of Making Memories. There was a sentence that included something of negligible importance. And the I'm falling into the trap again. The negligible importance, honestly, we had to do over 80 takes of that sentence. My tongue just tripped every time I had to sort of tackle it.
You know what, as a non-native speaker, I completely understand as well. English is not my first language either. So Mike, we're almost out of time, but I feel like we have time for maybe one last question, which is, of course, what would be your number one tip for creating that cozy, happy Hugo home?
And
it can only be one.
I mean, good slow-cooked food on the table is sort of the easiest way to get the Hugo going. I'm a big fan of food. I like cooking it. I like eating it. I like gathering good people around the table. So whatever favorite dish, get cooking or have people over cook together, that would be a good start. In Denmark, we often talk about something called the ABC for mental health. And ABC stands for act, belong, commit. So doing something active, doing something together with other people and doing something meaningful. And cooking with your family and friends, I can't see anything that's more meaningful. And it's, of course, together with other people. And you are a little bit active because you're in the kitchen. So that ticks all the boxes for me.
That was fantastic advice there, Mike. Thank you so much for sharing all of your Hugo knowledge with us. And Mike Viking, the wonderful author of My Hugo Home, How to Make Home Your Happy Place. Thank you for speaking with us on RNIB Connect Radio.
Thank you for having me, Paulina.
We need to embrace the idea that spaces and places definitely can have a positive impact on our well-being, that we can improve our quality of life through changing the spaces around us, and therefore that we can design for happiness. Or, to paraphrase Winston Churchill, we shape our homes and then they shape us. They affect how we feel and how we act.
Candlelight. This is an RNIB talking book.
Talking Books has two shows per day, one at 7am and the other at 2pm or 10pm if you prefer a book at bedtime.
My name is Jim Broadbent and I'm delighted to be reading for Talking Books.
Enjoy a classic from the RNIB Talking Books library morning, afternoon or evening.
This is Julia Donaldson and you're listening to Talking Books.
And for younger listeners or the young at heart, Children's Talking Books is on every Saturday at 9, Sunday at 3 or Tuesday at 6pm. Books for all ages all through the day, only on RNIB Connect Radio.
Across the UK, on Freeview Channel 730 and on smart devices. This is RNIB Connect Radio.
And it's the happy hour with Paulina, keeping you company, playing you some good tunes today, and of course, having those wonderful conversations all about well-being, happiness, and how we can look after ourselves. Well, I do love to bring you a random happiness fact, maybe a random happy national holiday coming up. Well, today, because Mike and I have been talking a lot about his book and he loves using data and research, well, I thought I'll bring in a happiness study to add to that little list. Well, there's a really lovely survey that was done in 2021 and it looked at why happiness was difficult to define. Well, apparently, what they found during the survey was that meaning of happiness shifts and changes depending on which stages of life we are in. So it's not just that happiness is really hard to define, because they found that as well, as much as by speaking to 100 people, they discovered that you can get 100 definitions with 100 different answers. Well, they also found that those answers would change and shift as we got older, or maybe if we spoke to someone younger. So apparently younger people are more likely to associate happiness with excitement, whilst older people are more likely to associate happiness with peacefulness. And you know what? I don't think I'm very old, or I don't think anyone that knows me would classify me as such, but I am definitely in the group of people that associates happiness with peacefulness. So, you know what? I probably feel older than I am, but I don't mind. I think that just sounds like heaven. Anyway, coming up after George Ezra, we'll be hearing about RNIB's peer Kickstarter group that's launched in the Midlands.
But she moves like lightning, and she counts to three. And she turns out all the lights and says she's coming for me. Now put your hands up, this is a heist. And there's no one in here living gonna make it out alive. Load it up when the sun comes down. Getaway car for two young lovers. Me and the girl straight out of town. Over the hills and undercover, undercover, undercover. She said, green, green grass, blue, blue sky. You better throw a party on the day that I die. Green, green grass.
You're listening to The Happy Hour on RNIB Connect Radio. A new support group from RNIB has launched in the town of Melton in the East Midlands. And to tell us a little bit more about it, I'm joined now by RNIB's Community Connection Coordinator for the Midlands, Hannah Masuria. Lovely speaking with you today, Hannah.
Hiya, nice to speak to you too.
Now, let's talk about the group. It's called Peer Kickstarter, but why was it set up?
So the group was set up as we were looking at some areas, specifically in Leicestershire, being one of the counties that I cover, the areas that don't have a great deal going on, where we had quite a few people on our RNIB database in the area, because what we wanted to do was try and set something up as kind of a peer support group that would eventually be able to go on to be an independent group. So we chose Melton Mowbray, as we knew that there wasn't a great deal going on there in terms of peer support for blind and partially sighted people. And we could see from our database that we had quite a few people registered with RNIB in that area. So that's why we chose Melton Mowbray.
Okay, and you already had your first session for that group. How many people were actually on it, and how did it go?
Yeah, so it was really good. So there was 10 people, including myself, and it went really well. So it was in a local cafe. We all just kind of sat, grabbed a coffee, had a bit of a chat. As it was the first meeting, we went round and did a few introductions. But it was really nice. I got there and there was people already there and chatting, so that was really nice to see. And it turned out that there was people in the group that had connections with each other that they didn't know about, and already knew each other from other walks of life. So it was really nice to see and really interesting to hear all the conversations going on. So yeah, it went really well. We had two members from the Torch Trust, who run a group in Melton Mowbray. They came along to just let the group know about what they do as well. So that was nice that we're getting kind of other organisations involved in it as well, to just share information really.
So, what was the group like? Because I imagine it's quite a varied group of people. I'm assuming different ages, different genders.
It was a good mix actually. So the youngest participant, I believe, was 27 or 28. I didn't ask the age of the oldest one, but yeah, it did go quite high up in age as well. And again, a really good mix of gender. We actually had more men attending, which is something that's quite unusual for these groups. So it was really nice to see some gentlemen come out and want to meet new people and get involved in things like that. So that was really nice to see. So yeah, it was a really wide mix of people. Everybody seemed to be able to get on and have a chat. And I'm hoping as the groups go on each week, people sit next to different people and just get to know each other really.
What would you say is the biggest benefit of groups like the Peer Kickstarter? What do you hope people attending them will get out of it?
I think it's kind of in the name, in that peer support, as we know that blind and partially sighted people can often feel quite alone, and feel quite lonely. So it's nice to just meet other people who are going through a similar experience and can understand what you're going through. And they did actually mention in the group, which was quite nice, that they don't want all their conversations to just be about their sight loss. The group, they're there to just make new friends, and they've got something in common in that they also live in the same local area. So they were quite keen on the talk not just always being about that, which was nice, but it is that common interest, and it's a way to relate to other people. And it's a kind of an instant connection, because each person can understand somewhat how the other people are feeling. So I think it's really beneficial for people to attend these groups to meet new people in general, but also meet people that kind of understand what you're going through.
And I guess the nice thing as well is, if you're feeling lonely, it's such a nice thing to know that there's something you can look forward to every week.
Yeah, certainly. There was one lady there specifically that had heard about the group from her friend, who had cut it out of the local newspaper for her. And she said to me she was really thankful for her friend to that, because otherwise she wouldn't have known, and she'd have just been sat in her house on her own. And actually to get out and meet new people and be able to have something to look forward to is really important to her. So that was really nice to hear that story from her, of how beneficial it is in terms of just getting out and having something to look forward to.
Well, the Pure Kickstarter group sounds absolutely amazing. I imagine it's open to people that are in that Melton area of the East Midlands, and there's more sessions coming up. So, can we still join them? Can we still come and attend the session?
Absolutely. So the group runs fortnightly on a Tuesday. So we've got five more sessions booked in at the cafe. But that's not to say that after those six sessions, the group will end. What we will do after that is speak to the group. And if they want to continue to meet, we will help facilitate them to meet independently. RNIB will still always be there to help and advise if they need it. But our aim is for the group to just become a group of people that meet in a coffee shop once a fortnight. It's as simple as that, really. So people are more than welcome to come along to the next five sessions, and they can get in touch with myself to register their interest and let us know, because we do reserve an area in the cafe to make sure we've got enough seats as well. But yes, certainly we are very welcoming of new people and anyone that wants to come along and meet new people and have a chat and a coffee. It's very informal, it's very friendly, so yeah, all are welcome.
Hannah, so what's the best way to get in touch with you?
So the best way to get in touch with me would be to probably drop me an email. So that is hannah.masoria@rnib.org.uk. Or if people phone the RNIB helpline, they can refer into me as well, if that's easier to do it by phone. If they just phone the helpline number and ask to be referred to Community Connection in the East Midlands for the Melton group, it will come straight through to me.
Well, I'll give that number in a second, but would you mind spelling out your surname? Because it's written a little bit differently as well.
Yeah, sure. It's Meisuria.
So the email address was Hannah dot Masuria. So Meisuria @rnab.org.uk, and the RNAB helpline number is 0303 123 9999. But Hannah, it's been lovely speaking with you today, and I hope the other sessions go just as well as the first one.
That's wonderful. Thanks very much for having me on.
This
Oh, I love a good Fleetwood Mac song. You make loving fun. Oh, bringing us, unfortunately, to the end of today's happy hour. I hope you enjoyed the show. Remember, if you would like to share one of the interviews you heard today with someone, or maybe you just want to listen to it again because you really, really enjoyed it, you can find our podcast online. Just search for RNIB Happy Hour Podcast, and you can find all the episodes, the latest, the old ones, and just enjoy them. Now, of course, we do have one final thing on the show. As always, it's time for our music therapy moment. And you know what? Today's choice will be from Mike, who's going to return to choose that track. But if you would like to take part in this segment, just get in touch. It's radio@rnib.org.uk. Tell us what is a song that means a lot to you and why you want to share it with us. We would love to hear from you. Now, let's let Mike play us out. He has a great song choice for us today. And of course, join me on the happy hour next week. Bye.
Hi, it's Mike Viking. I'm the author of the little book of Hygge, also the founder of the Happiness Research Institute in Copenhagen and the Happiness Museum in Copenhagen. And in the Happiness Museum, we have a wall where people have written down what makes them happy. And there's a lot of food there. There's a lot of relationships. And there's also a lot of people who have written down music and different pieces of music. And recently I saw somebody who had written something called the Intermezzo from Calvaria Rusticana. And I listened to it and I thought it was an absolute beautiful piece of music. So I think we should go hear it now.